Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on real milk when we come back. Well, biotech beans, chemical corn, frankenfish, and the pesticide potato. That's what's on the menu down at your local neighborhood supermarket. And we're concerned that this technology is a serious threat to our health, to traditionally bred open-pollinated seeds, to the environment, and to the farmers that grow them. Listen to this quotation. It comes from the Chicago Tribune. Here's what they had to say. They said, quote, "We are being exposed to one of the largest uncontrolled experiments in history. In less than 5 years, these multinational corporations have flooded the marketplace with thousands of untested and unlabeled products containing foreign genetic material. These genetically modified organisms pose several real dangers because they have been engineered to create novel proteins that retard spoilage, produce their own insecticides, to allow the plants to tolerate larger and larger doses of weed killers," unquote. And what is really scary about all of this is that this doesn't come from Tom Clancy's latest thriller. These seeds are already a major part of the U.S. corn and soybean crops. Now, what happens if one of these so-called suicide genes, which prevent seed saving, what if it goes haywire and destroys the entire U.S. corn crop? Or what if it turns out that genetically modified rice kills people? Or causes genetic mutations or birth defects in people like thalidomide did back in the 1950s? Well, I don't want to take that risk, and I don't want to be a guinea pig in this ill-advised experiment, and I'm just betting that you don't either. So keep that in mind when you're buying from the grocery store, because there's a battle between your health and safety and the financial interests of these multinational seed and food processing companies. And you lose unless you have your own non-hybrid, open-pollinated seeds that are not genetically modified. Now, the law school has a program to teach you how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. It's a five-day school, and it includes lessons on marketing, business plans, growing organic foods, and the laws that control it. So why don't you call today and order my free four-hour CD package. Remember, it's entertaining, it's informative, it's educational, and best of all, it's free. And you can call right now. The number is 417-273-4967 to order yours. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request. That's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Real milk. What is it? Real milk. Is it the stuff that you get out of the grocery store? It's spelled the same. It's M-I-L-K. It kind of looks the same. It's white. Typically comes in gallon jugs. But is the real milk that we're talking about here from Acres USA's interview, and the milk that you buy in the grocery store, the same product? Well, Acres contains that it's something, or contends rather, that it's something different. And in this article, see if I can give you the author's name. Her name is Sally Fallon. Sally Fallon is being interviewed by Acres USA, and the question arises, what is real milk? And they answer, real milk comes from real cows. You know, we have a thing, it's called soy milk. Soy milk. Yeah, it's called milk. Not entirely clear why, because milk is a generic term. It comes from all kinds of mammals, You can have possum milk and coon milk and the cow's milk and goat's milk and sheep's milk and mare's milk. And there's all kinds of milk out there. When we think of milk, I think primarily the thought that comes to our mind is cow's milk in a gallon jug that comes out of the dairy case. I mentioned to you last time that real milk has 17 qualities to it that store milk does not have. Store milk has 17 qualities to it that real milk doesn't have. There's a distinguishing characteristic between real, whole, raw cow's milk that nobody has added anything to or done anything to, just natural stuff, you know, the way God designed it, and then store milk. There's just a world of difference. It's called the same, spelled the same, looks the same. But boy, that stuff is not the same. So what is real milk? Well, real milk comes from real cows. The source of most commercial milk is the modern Holstein cow, bred to produce huge quantities of milk, three times as much as the old-fashioned cow. These Holstein cows need special feed and antibiotics to keep her well. Her milk contains high levels of growth hormone from her pituitary gland. Even when she is spared the indignities of genetically engineered bovine growth hormone to push her to the utter limits of her milk production. Buy only milk from old-fashioned breeds of cows, such as Jerseys, Guernseys, and Red Devons, or from goats, or depending on what part of the world you live in, from llamas, water buffalo, or reindeer. Real milk comes from real cows on real feed. Real feed for cows is green grass in spring, summer, and fall. Green feed, silage, hay, and root vegetables in winter. It's not soy meal, cottonseed meal, or other commercial feeds, nor is it bakery waste, chicken manure, or citrus peel cake laced with pesticides. Vital nutrients like vitamins A and D and the price factor, a fat-soluble catalyst that promotes optimum mineral assimilation, are greatest in milk from cows eating green grass, especially rapidly growing green grass in the spring and fall. Vitamins A and D are greatly diminished, and the price factor disappears when milk cows are fed commercial feed. Soy meal has the wrong protein profile for the dairy cow, resulting in short burst of high milk production followed by premature death. Most milk, even most milk labeled organic, comes from dairy cows that are kept in confinement their entire lives and never see a blade of green grass. Buy only milk products from herds allowed to graze on green pasture. Real milk is not pasteurized. Pasteurization destroys enzymes, diminishes vitamin content, denatures fragile milk proteins, destroys vitamins C, B12, and B6. It kills beneficial bacteria, promotes pathogens, and is associated with allergies, increased tooth decay, colic in infants, growth problems in children, osteoporosis, arthritis, heart disease, and cancer. Calves fed pasteurized milk do poorly and many die before maturity. Raw milk sours naturally, but pasteurized milk turns putrid. Processors must remove slime and pus from pasteurized milk by a process of centrifugal clarification. Inspection of dairy herds for disease is not required for pasteurized milk. Pasteurization was instituted in the 1920s to combat TB, infant diarrhea, undulant fever, and other diseases caused by poor animal nutrition and dirty production methods. But times have changed, and modern stainless steel tanks, milking machines, refrigerated trucks, and inspection methods make pasteurization absolutely unnecessary for public protection. And pasteurization does not always kill the bacteria for Jones disease, suspected of causing Crohn's disease in humans, with which most confinement cows are in fact infected. Much commercial milk is now ultra-pasteurized to get rid of heat-resistant bacteria and to give it a longer shelf life. Ultra-pasteurization is a violent process that takes milk from a chilled temperature to above the boiling point in less than 2 seconds. Clean raw milk from certified healthy cows is available commercially in several states and may be bought directly from the farm and many more. Sources are listed on www.realmilk.com. Might want to jot that down, boys and girls. The sources of commercially available raw milk are available on the internet at www.realmilk.com. Demand access in all states to clean raw milk. Boycott processed milk. Down butterfat globules so that they do not rise to the top. Homogenization is a process that breaks down these butterfat globules so that they do not raise to the top, and homogenized milk has been linked to heart disease. Use only milk with cream on the top. Real milk contains butterfat and lots of it. Average butterfat content from old-fashioned cows at the turn of the century was over 4% or more than 50% of calories. Today, butterfat comprises less than 3% or less than 35% of calories. And worse, consumers have been duped into believing that low-fat and skim milk products are good for them. Only by marketing low-fat and skim milk as a health food can the modern dairy industry get rid of its excess, poor-quality, low-fat milk from modern high-production herds. Butterfat contains vitamins A and D needed for assimilation of calcium and protein in the water friction of the milk. Within or without them, protein and calcium are more difficult to utilize and possibly they're toxic. Butterfat is rich in short and medium chain fatty acids which protect against disease and stimulate the immune system. It contains glycospring lipids which prevent intestinal distress and conjugated linoleic acid which has a strong anti-cancer property. Buy only full-fat milk products. Real milk products contain no additives. Powdered skim milk, a source of dangerous oxidized cholesterol and neurotoxic amino acids, is added to 1% and 2% milk. Low-fat yogurts and sour creams contain... Oh, my God. I'm going to have to spell this. I'd never be able to pronounce... M-U-C-O-P-O-L-Y-S-A-C-C-H-A-R-I-D-E, whatever that is. It contains that kind of slime to give the body. Pale butter from hay-fed cows contains colorings to make it look like vitamin-rich butter from grass-fed cows. Bioengineered enzymes are used in large-scale cheese production. Many mass-produced cheeses contain additives and colorings, and imitation cheese products contain vegetable oil. Boycott these counterfeits. Real milk can save family farms. Pasteurization laws favor large industrialized dairy operations and squeeze out small farmers. When farmers have the right to sell unprocessed milk to consumers, they can make a decent living, even with small dairy herds. All right, so now that's what they contend is real milk. I'll second that. I prefer real milk myself. I never heard the term real milk until I read this article. I like the term. I think it's very descriptive. The milk you're buying in the grocery store is a solvent. It's an industrial product, which contains solvents, and I think it is a solvent. Well, Akers asks, what about butter? And Fallon answers, well, butter is the perfect fat, especially butter from cows on green pasture. It contains very important fat-soluble nutrients. It contains minerals and substances that help you fight cancer, substances that protect you against arthritis and heart disease. It is the supreme, most healthy fat there is. It has a wonderful fatty acid profile. Akers asks, going back to grocery store milk, we note that there is no butterfat listed on the package or carton. Is there any butterfat in that milk? Fallon, well, it depends. If it's whole milk, there's 3.5% butterfat, which is definitely less than you would get from real milk. acres. But whoever sees whole milk in the grocery store anymore? Fallon, I know. It's kind of disappeared, and the industry would much rather you bought your butterfat in ice cream than in the milk, because they make a lot more on it when it's an ice cream. So you drink the skim milk or low-fat milk. Then you have cravings for ice cream and get your butterfat that way. 1% and 2% milk have 1% and 2% fat, respectively. And they also have non-fat dry milk added to give it some body. And this is one of the additives that's not listed on the label, which we're extremely concerned about because it contains oxide cholesterol, MSG, and a number of carcinogens. Did you catch that? It contains oxide cholesterol, MSG, and a number of carcinogens. Now, as I said before, you know, I'm not opposed to you people drinking this pasteurized milk. I just don't want you to force it off on me. Now, I said there were 17 reasons why. There's three more reasons. Because real milk from my cows doesn't contain any oxide cholesterol, MSG, or other carcinogens that you find in store-bought milk. Acres asks this question. So as a health product, it's raw milk, fresh milk, real milk, hands down. Fallon says, oh, absolutely. There's just no comparison. And you know what's interesting to me? The sales of pasteurized fluid milk, as they call it, are decreasing at 1% a year. Relentlessly decreasing. And the industry knows this, and they're trying to find replacements for it. And one of the replacements is soy milk. All of the big dairy companies sell soy milk now. They're out putting out powdered milk into the so-called milk beverages and so forth, but it is a declining market for the dairy industry. The American public sees that the product is so poor, so bad, that they're refusing to buy it. Acres asks this question, but it's a growing market for the organic industry, isn't it? Fallon says, well, somewhat, but the fattest growing market is the raw milk market. It's still very small, but it's growing very rapidly. Acres asks, well, what's the difference then between the fresh milk producer and the people who sell organic product? Fallon answers, the organic milk producer is getting a better price than the conventional milk producer. I'm not sure what they are right now, but the figures I've heard, they're getting about $11 a hundredweight for regular milk and maybe up to $20 for organic milk. A big difference, and you're more likely to get milk from cows that have been on pasture if it's organic, but there's no guarantee because Horizon cows are not on pasture, most of them in any event. In my opinion, though, the worst thing about organic milk as opposed to real milk is that it's all on virtually all ultra-pasteurized. This is a process that takes the milk from a slightly chilled temperature up to the boiling point, actually above the boiling point in 2 seconds. Nothing like this ever happens in nature. And the proteins in milk are very fragile. Precisely folded three-dimensional molecules that are totally distorted by this extremely rapid heating. All right, so let's pause here for a moment. Let's talk about this organic milk for a second. Now, I'm a milk producer, so let me tell you how we do it here. Organic. That means that we don't use any chemical fertilizers or chemical pesticides on our pastures or around our cows where they might eat it. That's what makes organic. But there's a second factor that comes in here, and that's where you buy feed from the feed store. You know, the Purina people are from, you know, from the Tyndall Mills or someplace, and they put in their bypass protein. And the reason they have to put in this bypass protein is that we no longer practice land Sabbaths and jubilees here in the United States. Not that we ever did, but, you know, there was a time in America when some people actually did crazy things like follow biblical law as it relates to agriculture. There are 15 of these agricultural laws that God gave us. Land Sabbaths and Jubilees are one of them. In 1880, the protein content of wheat coming out of Kansas measured 24%. Today it's 7 to 13%. Dairy cows have to have a protein ration of around 17% in order to milk efficiently. Well, you can't get that out of most hay and most grains that come out of Kansas or Nebraska, because we have been farming this land and farming this land with chemical fertilizers and the chemical process. We turn out bins and bins and bushels of foodless food and then feed it to our cows, and the cows can't produce on it. So we had to come up with a way by which we could increase the protein content of the dairy rations. And here came science to the rescue. And they said, look, we've got all of this waste that's going for no good purpose, and it's coming out of our slaughterhouses. Let's take all that waste, the entrails of cows, let's dry it, and then let's grind it up, powder it, and put it in the feed, and raise the protein content to 17%. The result was mad cow disease. You know, every time we dink around with nature, we cause a bigger problem than we had to start with. Genetically modified organisms is another dinking around process that we're trying to do to overcome the deficiencies that we've created ourselves by refusing to practice the agricultural laws of the Bible. It's just that simple. And so science comes along and says, well, we can violate the laws of God and we can get away with it because we've got science over here and we'll come up with an answer to that. Well, okay, keep working, fellas. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. So that's the reason why we have to have these additives put into the feed. Now, does this pasteurization, in fact, cancel out the para-T or paratuberculosis agent? Fallon says, the paratuberculosis bacteria is endemic in the confinement dairies that causes John's disease in cows and has been associated with Crohn's disease in humans. The answer to your question is no. The last numbers I heard were that about 19% of pasteurized milk samples were positive for John's disease. There's another reason why I don't want to drink pasteurized milk, because 19% of it tests positive for John's disease, which translates into Crohn's disease in humans. I don't want that. I don't want to prevent you from getting it because that's what you want to buy. What I'm trying to do is to protect myself from overzealous people like you who go to the legislatures and say, what we've got to have is a law to protect Gordon from himself. Why, that crazy lunatic is going to go out here and drink raw milk, and we got to save him from it. And I just wanted all you good people out there to leave me alone, if you would, please. Akers asked this question. This is where much of the increasing incidence of lower bowel disorder is coming from. Fallon says, you certainly can make a case that it contributes to it. Now, the industry's response to this has not been to talk and educate about John's disease, but instead to try to get everything ultra-pasteurized. Although I'm not convinced that's a long-term solution to killing the John's bacteria because they're just becoming more and more heat-resistant. Akers asks, now, didn't they have a bill proposed in Congress a while back for a big subsidy to depopulate the reactors to John's disease? We ran an item on it in Akers USA a couple of years ago, and of course it didn't go anywhere because when you start asking for $2.1 billion, you're starting to talk about some real money. And Fallon answers and says, well, there are so many problems with the modern dairy industry. First of all, it's heavily subsidized. Second, they have such a short lifespan for the cows that the cost of replacement cattle is going up. I've had vets tell me that they're concerned about how small a genetic variance there is in our national herd. And one particular microorganism or one disease can just wipe them out. You don't have the protection that you have from a diverse genetic pool. A diverse genetic pool means that you're avoiding inbreeding. You're not breeding these cows. Now, here in America, all we have is Holsteins. That's all that's in the dairy pool. That's all anybody wants to milk is Holsteins. And they get the semen from the bulls that come from producers that produce the same semen from the same bulls that go into all of the dairy herds across the nation. That's why they're telling you that the genetic pool is becoming smaller and smaller, and the cattle are becoming more and more inbred, more and more susceptible to more and more diseases. And that's why I try to stay away from Holstein cattle. I have Jerseys, and I recommend other breeds of cattle, Guernseys, Jerseys, Dutch Belted, Ayrshires, you know, anything but a Holstein. Holsteins are wonderful cows. They're big, big boned, and they give lots of milk. Unfortunately, they don't give very much butterfat. My old granny used to call that Blue John. She wouldn't drink the stuff. She said it's just trash. So I grew up that way. I grew up where they had real milk. Then about 1950, somebody woke up in California and said, we've got to banish this real milk and put in pasteurization. And it got to the point where the only thing available is pasteurized milk. Fortunately, I worked on the dairy, and so I had all the raw milk that I wanted until I left the dairy and went to the city and drank homogenized milk. Between the ages of 23 and 44, 23 to 44, in 21 years, gave me a heart attack. It's one of the causes of heart disease, and that's homogenization and pasteurization of the milk. Once I got off of homogenized and pasteurized milk, started drinking raw cream again, and I cleaned out my arteries and veins, and now I'm back to normal. Fallon answers this question. And this is where much of the increasing incidence of lower bowel disease is coming from. Fallon said you can certainly make a case for that. And they went on to ask, well, let's pick up again on the economics for this of this for the farmer. Fallon, I've done some calculations, and I've talked to a lot of farmers who tell me that what I'm saying is conservative. A dairy farm with 30 cows. Now, you guys out there, if you've got a few cows, listen to this. I've done some calculations, and I've talked to a lot of farmers. They tell me that with 30 cows on 100 acres, if they're selling all of their milk products directly to the consumers, they'll gross at least $150,000 a year, and if they add other products to that, they'll gross about $200,000 a year, and that's a lot of money for a small farm, and that's conservative, and the expenses aren't that high. When I was a kid, it was common for a guy to milk 20 cows and support his family on 20 cows. My Aunt Bessie and Uncle Otto had a little dairy of 20 or 25 cows. I think it was on about 25 or 30 acres, maybe a 40. In Ferndale, California, very common. Then, as the economics of the circumstance changed, primarily due to pasteurization in 1950, the little farmers were squeezed out, and then only the 100-cow dairies. Now, it's very common for dairies to have 9,000, 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 cows, milking 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on feedlots. They call them milk sheds. And they produce this industrial solvent that we brand as milk and put it in the dairy case in the supermarket. Now, the point that they're making here is that you could sell real milk out of a little dairy, 100 acres, 30 cows, make $150,000 a year, which is precisely what Booker T. Watley came up with back in the 1970s. Now, the marketing plan is the key to that, and here at the law school, we teach that marketing plan along with the laws that govern in each state. One of the key things is you've got to comply with the laws of your state. And that's where a lot of these guys get themselves into trouble. They don't know the law themselves, and they go out here and they enter commerce, and then they sell raw milk into a monopoly. You can't sell raw milk in a monopoly. It's against the law. So let's be intelligent people. That's the bottom line. Now, as a result of that, you have people who are losing their land, getting prosecuted and jailed, and are having all kinds of trouble with government and problems, and it gets to be in some cases life-threatening. So let's be intelligent. Acres asks, if they've got good pasture, they've got their feed costs down very low, too. Fallon, exactly. Very low feed bills. Virtually no vet bills. And, of course, that model takes a lot of work. This kind of operation either needs a big family or some help on the farm, which isn't bad either if the operation is employing people. but I did some calculations, and if just 10% of the population would buy their dairy products, eggs and meat, directly from this type of farm, we'd need 75,000 of those farms in this country, each grossing over 200,000 a year. That would be the engine for a huge rural revival. Now, you know, there's always talk of the government coming in here, you know, with price supports and some kind of a government program. Hasn't it ever dawned on anybody yet that this government program and the government intervention in the agricultural field is the cause of the farmers' problem? We don't take any agricultural price supports here. We don't participate in any government programs here on this farm at all. None. Zero. I'm not complaining about the prices that we receive here. I'm not going to advertise what we do receive here, but I'm telling you that it's more than the average guy out here on the streets getting. In private business, dealing with meat, milk, butter, and eggs, I'm not complaining about the prices. I don't have any problems selling the product. And I don't think that there's any... I don't think that there's any problem selling the product. I think there's a problem in trying to produce it. Just go into any health food store and take a look at the fruits and vegetables, the meat, milk, butter, and eggs, and see what you got to choose from. You know, most health food stores sell pills, vitamin pills. They might as well just call them vitamin pill stores. That's about what they have in there. They'll oftentimes have some honey in there, and that's good. And sometimes they'll have some foodstuffs in there, you know, like dried pineapple or something like that that's organically grown, and that's a help. And I'm not criticizing the health food stores. I'm just telling you that the health food store can't sell raw milk. The monopoly won't allow it. And the people that are into health foods won't buy pasteurized milk to start with. So the health food guy over there, he just, you know, can't provide a service for customers that need the product. So then the only solution that's left is that you've got to buy it directly from the farmer in those states where you can. And where you can't buy whole milk, then you have to have some kind of a co-op, a legal mechanism, where you have a front organization or person who fronts for you. But you can have raw milk in every state in the United States. It's available. You can have organic meat without all of the additives and all the chemicals that go with it. You just have to work a little harder at it. And Acres USA, I've always said, ought to be the catalyst. You know, this is the place where everybody ought to zero in and say, hey, Acres, steer us on to the right guy. And in this case, Acres is steering you on to this lady, Sally. Let's see if I got her name up here now again. Sally Fallon. And her organization... Would they call that organization again? It's kind of an odd name. She is the editor of the Foundation's quarterly magazine. It's called the President of the Weston A. Price Foundation. Sally Fallon, President of the Weston A. Price Foundation. She's got a lot of good ideas, and I'm sure the foundation means well, and I'm sure that they're gonna do a lot of good things for us all. And I recommend the Acres USA paper for, that is their monthly periodical, called Acres USA. And it's the Voice of Echo Agriculture, Volume 36, Number 5. It's the May 2006 edition for this interview. It's worth the $5 just for this one interview, without a doubt. Now, going along with this, there's another publication out here I've read to you from a time or two, or I've reported on a time or two, which is called The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. And it's written by a guy by the name of Douglas, William Campbell Douglas. Dynamite little book. Hard to come by. And this guy, Campbell Douglas, I got this book 20 years ago, and I think you can get a copy of it if you would call Acres USA. They put out books like this. You call Acres USA and tell them you want a copy of The Milk of Human Kindness Isn't Pasteurized by William Campbell Douglas, and they'll tell you where you can get it. And I'm going to review a couple, three chapters here as we progress along over here, because it's kind of a dynamite topic, and it fits right in with this article here that we're talking about in what's happening with real milk. Fits right in. And with the new government policy on recording or registering all the farms in the country. Now, a lot of you people out there, maybe you've got a horse or two. I mean, the government wants you to register that horse with the government. They want you to register your farm and register your two horses so the government will know what you own and where they're at. Now, that's a guardian ward relationship, and I'm telling you boys and girls that the guy that registers his farm isn't the guardian. He is the ward. I don't intend to become the ward of the United States of America. I know President Bush means well, and he keeps telling me that he wants to protect the American people. Mr. Bush, would you do me a favor and stop protecting me? Get out of my life. Get out of my face. Leave me alone. I don't need you, don't want you, and you're a nice guy, and I love you like a brother, but out of my life. Okay, now with the politics out of the way, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not endorsed or totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Keep in mind that these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. I should give you one last reminder that this lady's phone number, her name is Sally Fallon, the number to call, 202-363-4394. That's 202-363-4394. And if you'd like more information on a dairy farm near you in your state, if you would go to the website www.westonaprice.org, they have it there. www.westonaprice, that's spelled W-E-S-T-O-N-A P-R-I-C-E, all one word, .org. And, of course, let me plug Acres. The people there at Acres, especially old Charlie Walters, I don't know his boy. I never did meet him, but his boy is running this Acres thing now. Old Charlie's been in this business, God knows for how long. It's longer than I can remember. And he writes every month in the Acres paper. and I'll give you a shot of old Charlie here before we finish the series of programs. And he had a little something to say about this National Animal Identification Program. The Acres people, located in Austin, Texas. Here's their phone number. It's 512-892-4400. Again, that's area code 512-892-4400. Why don't you give them a call and tell them you'd like to subscribe to the Acres USA newsletter. Now, I told you about William Campbell Douglas. In Chapter 1, he writes a story in here about utter, U-D-D-E-R, destruction. Utter destruction. And let me get past Yellow Cows here to Utter Destruction, Part 1. And here's what he tells us. This is going to be an important chapter. It's the heart of the book, and we're going to divide it into Part 1 and Part 2. A friend of mine in Florida was talking to his wife, talking to the wife, of a dairyman at a party. And my friend, conscious of the myriad of problems associated with pasteurized, homogenized milk, asked her if their dairy would supply her family with raw milk. The woman blanched white and she stiffened. "Certainly not. We would never touch the stuff." The dairyman's wife was offended and embarrassed that such a question would be asked in polite company. It's almost like talking in four-letter words. Raw milk. Raw milk. Well, yeah, that is kind of four-letter word territory, isn't it? Well, when someone that close to milk production has such an emotional and deep-rooted prejudice against fresh milk, the pasteurizers, along with most public health departments and doctors, have indeed convinced the people that heat treatment of milk, called pasteurization, is as essential as fluoridation of our water. But, as with fluoridation, not everybody has been convinced, and there's a small band of determined and dedicated dairy farmers and nutritionists who continue to work for the return of fresh, untreated, raw cow's milk. Initially, the motivation for pasteurization was anything but altruistic. Unscrupulous dairymen knew that if they heated the milk, it wouldn't sour. That's a harmless but often gastronomically undesirable state. Heat treatment enabled them to avoid expensive sanitary procedures and to deliver the milk to unsuspecting consumers, apparently fresh. The milk was anything but fresh, it was dead. Pasteurized milk is dead. Having killed most of the enzymes and altered the protein and fat through heat, the milk didn't sour. It rotted, as any dead animal tissue will. However, the dead milk was usually drunk before the rotting process took place. So no one has ever been the wiser from that day to this. And in spite of modern techniques of pasteurization, pasteurized milk is still dead milk. It's dead food, which will rot upon standing. People who are knowledgeable in dairy science at the turn of the century were opposed to heat treatment of milk. They realized that one of nature's perfect foods was being altered from a nutritional food to a processed, unnatural food, and during this period called the Dark Era by pasteurization zealots, conscientious nutritionists and dairy experts strongly opposed pasteurization, realizing that commercial interests were only concerned about shelf life and they were not concerned about nutrition or unadulterated milk. Cholera infantum was a dreaded disease of children in the early 20th century. 5,000 babies died every year from this summer diarrhea. It was found to be caused by milk contaminated by an excessive number of ordinary dirt bacteria, reported Dr. Park of the New York City Health Department. It was just plain dirty milk. But instead of requiring the dairies to clean up their act and produce clean milk, they turned rather to heat treatment of the milk, and they eradicated the dreaded cholera infantum. but they paid a terrible price. You see, a steady increase in crib death, infantile allergy, colitis, heart disease, stroke, and sexual impotency, just to name a few of the maladies, have now taken its place. As a temporary expedient, while the technologies of sanitation engineering and refrigeration were developing, heat treatment, pasteurization was better than nothing. Although the milk was inferior and would cause degenerative diseases later in life, at least it wouldn't kill the children or the babies in their infancy. But the milk producers are clinging to outdated methods in an age of sophisticated sanitation where even horse liniment and toilet paper are made under remarkably clean conditions. The milk industry leans heavily on heat treatment of milk and milk products to cover up sloppy production methods. This is sanitation at the wrong end. The dairymen continue to look backward toward Pasteur rather than forward to Coit, Mathis, and Struve. They continue to destroy the food value of milk for economic expediency when technologically it is no longer necessary. Initially, the dairy industry itself also fought the compulsory heating of milk. No one likes to change the system because it costs money. Finally, losing in court, the dairymen caved in and joined the pasteurization movement. Today, locked into the heat pasteurization system, they will fight equally hard to avoid moving forward to fresh, unheated milk production. The industry continues to protect us against disease conditions of 100 years ago, and in the process, they destroyed the value of the milk that they're selling today. In the book Milk Pasteurization, Hall and Trout say that perhaps no other single innovation has made such an impact on a food industry as the heat treatment of milk. Within the span of 100 years, the milk industry evolved from almost total obscurity to be the giant of the food industry. The flowering of the milk industry was made possible by the parboiling or pasteurization, as it is now called, of milk. This parboiling or heating of milk had no effect on the incidence of tuberculosis caused by milk. The incidence of brucellosis or undulant fever, contrary to popular opinion, was really not affected by the pasteurization process at all. Brucellosis is not contracted through milk, but by association directly with animals. The farmer or other adult milking the cow would often get brucellosis, but his children who drank most of the milk seldom got the disease. This so-called pasteurization process is far from new. It was done long before Pasteur. In 1782, the Swedish scientist Scheele used heat pasteurization treatment to preserve vinegar. In fact, the earliest recorded incidence of the pasteurization process was actually in 1765 by Spallandese, who preserved meat through the heating process. In 1824, a professor of obstetrics at the University of Pennsylvania, William Dews, recommended heating milk to the boiling point, then cooling for infant feeding. He said, "In hot weather, it is true, the tendency to decomposition is diminished by boiling the milk, but as all the advantages which may result in the process can be procured without its being absolutely boiled, it should never be had recourse to." And although Pasteur was given the credit for the parboiling method, and it takes its name from pasteurization, or of pasteurization from him, the record does not show that Louis Pasteur ever pasteurized any milk. Pasteur succeeded in developing a system of heat application to control fermentation and thus the preservation of wine. The wine industry was greatly benefited, as he had discovered the method of preventing wine spoilage. He also succeeded in applying this principle to the preservation of beer. Pasteur does indeed deserve credit, as the basic method applied to milk is the same as that for producing and preserving beer. A German, Sachsfalz, about 20 years after Pasteur's discovery, applied Pasteur's method to the pasteurization of milk for infant feeding. This process was introduced in the United States in 1889. It was a fellow by the name of Nathan Strauss. He was a wealthy New York philanthropist, and he was appalled at the mortality of children who were being fed raw milk. So he established milk depots in the city of New York, which offered heat-treated milk to children. The death rate from raw milk fell dramatically in New York as a result of Strauss's effort. Strauss spread the gospel around the United States and, in fact, the entire world. He was the single most influential man in making pasteurization a universally used and recognized procedure. Hall and Trout, in their book Milk Pasteurization, are extremely laudatory of the pasteurization process, and they obviously feel that pasteurization is one of the greatest boons ever to come to mankind. And the authors list former objections to pasteurization of milk and clearly imply that none of these objections are currently valid. So we will list some of these former objections and make some comments upon them. First, pasteurization is an excuse for the sale of dirty milk. Second, pasteurization may be used to mask low-quality milk. Third, pasteurization promotes carelessness and discourages the effort to produce clean milk. Fourth, compulsory pasteurization would diminish the incentive to clean milk production. Heat destroys a great number of bacteria in milk and thus conceals the evidence of dirt. Pasteurization impairs the flavor of milk. Pasteurization diminishes the nutrient value of milk. Pasteurization of the milk is devitalization. Pasteurization diminishes vitamin content. Pasteurization destroys vitamin C. Calcium and other minerals are precipitated and made unavailable by pasteurization. Milk enzymes are destroyed. Infants do not develop well on pasteurized milk. Children and infants thrive better on raw milk. Pasteurized milk is more likely to lead to decay in teeth. Pasteurized milk is more likely to be constipating. Pasteurization destroys the creaming ability of milk. Pasteurization influences the composition of milk. Pasteurization destroys the souring bacteria of milk so that milk, instead of souring normally, will putrefy if kept long enough. Pasteurization kills the bacilli in milk and causes it to decompose when exposed to air. Pasteurization destroys beneficent enzymes, antibodies, and hormones which take the life out of milk. Pasteurization may be carelessly done, therefore it is not infallible. Pasteurized milk may diminish resistance to disease, especially in young babies. And the death from pasteurization remains uniformly lower in rural areas where much milk is drunk raw than in cities where the milk is pasteurized. Compulsory pasteurization would remove the stimulus to eradicate diseased animals from milking herds. Pasteurized milk interferes with the proper development of the teeth and predisposes to dental caries. And pasteurization would lead to an increase in infant mortality. And finally, pasteurization gives a false sense of security. Let me count those up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 28 reasons why. 28 objections. Let me write that down. 28 objections to pasteurized milk. Now, this Dr. Douglas over here is just a crummy M.D. He really doesn't know diddly squat. I mean, after all, he's not a Ph.D., is he? And unless you got a piled higher and deeper status, what would he know about milk? Now, I told you in the last program, I had an old country doctor. His name was, let's see if I remember his name now, Dr. Lester. Milton, I think, was his first name. Milton Lester. And he looked at me one day and he says, God, you're sick. Just looked at me. I said, what makes you say that, Lester? And he said, well, look at your ears. I said, well, okay, my ears look funny. He says, no, it's not funny. Not funny at all. He says, you see those big creases in the lobe of your ear? That line that goes across the lobe of your ear is the sign. It tells me that your arteries are clogged up to about 80%. And when your arteries are clogged up, you start having symptoms of heart attack and stroke. He asked me a funny question. He says, how long have you had that heart pain? And I was really surprised that he asked me that. And I said, who told you I have any heart pain? He says, I can see it in your ears. And I can see it in your eyes. He was also a iridologist. And he was a medical doctor, a chiropractor. He was a naturopath. And he was an iridologist. I mean, this old boy kind of knew his onions. And so I fessed up. I said, well, once in a while I have a little pain in my heart. And he says, that's right. And that's because your arteries are clogged up. And every once in a while, your heart is struggling to get enough oxygen. And that's what causes that pain. And he said, then when you start breathing again, or you get off of your side, I said, mainly when I go to sleep on my left side. He said, yeah. It's like your arm goes to sleep. He said, you're cutting off circulation to your heart, and your heart starts hurting because it's not getting enough oxygen. I said, well, what would you recommend? He says, you drink one cup of raw cow's cream a day. That's minimal. You can drink more. You can drink all you want. Drink a gallon a day if you can get it down. He put me on that regimen for 90 days, and in 90 days I came back and all of the plugged up arteries and all of the heart symptoms had disappeared in 90 days drinking raw cow's cream. You see, boys and girls, your immune system coupled with natural foods will heal itself. Raw milk is a natural food, and God gave us a land that he called the land of milk and honey. And the land of milk and honey wasn't pasteurized. And it wasn't adulterated either. Now, when you're putting in all of these additives into the milk, that's just plain adulteration. Go look up the word adultery or adulteration in a dictionary, and he'll tell you that it's the introduction of something that's inferior into a superior product. Boys and girls, adding things like GMOs, antibiotics, hormones, and estrogen into the milk, those are inferior products. That doesn't do anything for the natural value of the milk. Now, there are many others and that we won't list, but the interesting and important point here is that all of these former objections to pasteurized milk are just as true today as they were when they were listed by Hall and Trout 15 years ago. Hall and Trout go on in glowing terms to tell us how three generations have thrived on pasteurized milk and enjoy radiant health. But they admit, with so many beliefs unfavorable to the pasteurization of milk, one is astounded that the process was ever introduced. The final acceptance of pasteurization by the consumer is little short of phenomenal. That's where we'll pick this up next time. And that is the state of Massachusetts back in 1908 and the acceptance of pasteurized milk by the consumer. It's phenomenal, but it's true. All right, I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide 7 days a week over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Here, time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking about raw milk. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.